Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Coming up on NFL Live, could the coronavirus put the NFL season in jeopardy? We'll hear from voices around the league as they weigh in on what's next. And what's next are the Bengals on the clock. All signs point to Joe Burrow, but should Cincy entertain a trade? We'll tell you who may be looking to move up. And in honor of April Fool's Day, the best plays that fooled us, which trick plays top our list? Hello, everybody, and happy Wednesday. I'm Wendy Nix, and happy to have with us this afternoon Dana Orlovsky, Louis Riddick, Diana Rossini, and Jeff Darlington. Diana, we'll start with you and some news on free agent Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah, it's been a really interesting market for Jadeveon Clowney because you go back a few weeks ago and it seemed that there were a lot of teams in on Clowney, but the asking price was somewhere in that $20 million range. And when you take a look at Clowney's production just from last season, he didn't have one of his top years, of course.
Well, Diana, thank you. Some technical difficulties. We'll be back. And as of right now, the NFL plans to start its 2020 season on time in September. And this is according to a number of executives on Tuesday. And despite a global coronavirus pandemic that has certainly shut down the sports world, here is Executive Vice President General Counsel Jeff Pasch on the league's expectations.
All of our focus has been on a normal traditional season, starting on time, playing in front of fans in our regular stadiums, and going through the full 16-game regular season and a full set of playoffs.
There's so much uncertainty, you know, during this time, and you look ahead and you ask yourself, there's going to be football season. I don't think anybody knows. And so, you know, for a lot of the guys on the team, I'm sure Chuck as well, it's about focusing on, you know, family, you know, right now. And then just listening to all your health officials, you know, knowing that everybody's in this together, everyone's going to, you know, help fight this, you know, virus together. So that's what our minds are going to be like right now. So we're not sure what's going to happen, but, you know, we got to focus on the things that matter. You know, that's family and then social distancing and being smart.
Louis Riddick, I'll start with you. What's your take on the NFL season potentially starting on time as scheduled?
Yeah, Wendy, I mean, look, the NFL right now really doesn't feel as though they have anything to lose, so to speak, by continuing to voice that they, you know, plan on optimistically starting the season on time, playing games in regular stadiums, in your regular home stadiums, and having full stadiums. Although we all know that that is subject to change because life as we know it is subject to change minute by minute, day by day, let alone 4 or 5 months from now. We have no idea what things are going to look like and what we're going to be able to do and what our mobility is going to be relative to the coronavirus that's taking place right now. So, look, I know there's some people who get upset, and I know I initially got upset about the fact that I felt that the league was being kind of tone deaf and being a little bit non towards everything else that is going on, especially with people who have been hit hard by this disease, and it is many and growing by the day. But look, I mean, they have nothing to lose right now. I understand that they're trying to prepare for the best case scenario. But I think these are all smart people who understand that this could all change at a moment's notice, and they have to be prepared to do so because, you know, as others have said and as I have said, and I'm sure as you feel the same way, look, our number one priorities are our health and the health of our families and our loved ones. And football, without a doubt, is taking a backseat to all of that, as it should.
As it should, and no question the situation is fluid. Dan, what do you anticipate a new season looks like when we get to that point?
I mean, if our new season or our training camps start on time, it'll be like the OTAs happened. I mean, guys will just roll in and be in shape and they'll figure things out. Teams will figure things out if it starts on time. And if it doesn't start on time, teams will adjust. I would disagree with Mr. Pasha's comment that, you know, all of their focus is on the NFL season kind of starting as planned, stadiums packed and all that stuff. Like, if that happens, that's easy. Everyone knows how to do that. Teams, front offices, players, fans, everybody knows how to go about that. But the NFL needs to have contingency plans. They need to have multiple options they can go to if things change, because the reality is this. It's April 1st, and I think the majority of all of us who adore football would say that if we get to September and we get to watch football games in empty stadiums, we'll be thankful for that. If that's the best that we get, we will be thankful for that. But the NFL and individual teams, players and coaches, all need to have multiple contingency plans depending on the information we get from all the experts in regards to what's going on.
You absolutely have to at this point. Dan, thank you. Jeff Darlington, as we turn the page on a new month and with the new league year well underway, let's take a look at some free agents still on the market, and we'll start with Cam Newton.
Well, Wendy, let's talk about some of that uncertainty we were discussing about the NFL season. Talk about three guys right here that are actually facing uncertainty in a way that makes them wonder what team they'll even be on. Cam Newton, a very important one here, dealing with the foot and shoulder injuries coming out of the last couple seasons. A new team also going to have to pay a high dollar to acquire this player. As a result, until teams can get their doctors the ability to look at Cam Newton to see what they're getting into, I think it's going to be a very tough market for him to find a new franchise. Now, Jameis Winston, another example of a guy, not health issues here, more character concerns for a team that would potentially bring him in. The biggest difference, I should say, between him and Cam Newton is that Jameis ultimately likely not to covet quite as much money on the market. As a result, he could focus more on becoming perhaps a backup, go with the Ryan Tannehill model, try to go somewhere where he might get a chance at some other point in 2020. Jadeveon Clowney, something that Diana was hitting on before technical difficulties took her down there. We're talking about Jadeveon Clowney as a guy who was a $20 million a man guy. Now, all of a sudden, by bringing that market down, getting more teams involved and interested, potentially to the point where a team would be more comfortable signing him despite some of the injury issues that have sort of plagued him over the years. He has shown the ability, though, to get through some of those issues. If he can do that, I think he'll find a new home, perhaps Seattle, perhaps Tennessee. Those probably the two teams we should be watching closest right now.
Jeff, thank you. And Diana, you know we can't keep a good woman down. She's back with us. So, Dee, what do you hear regarding potential landing spots for Jadeveon Clowney?
Yeah, keep your equipment charged. That's a lesson I just learned. But Jeff really hit it on the head there with Clowney's market. And what I was saying before is, you know, his market was pretty robust early on when, you know, teams were obviously aware that he was going to be a free agent and Seattle was going to let him go. But that $20 million asking price just seemed a little too steep for tons of organizations. Going back just a few weeks ago, obviously Tennessee was involved. Seattle, as we know, are involved now. But, you know, the Jets were interested at one point. The Cleveland Browns were even flirting a little bit with Jadeveon Clowney, but that price just was a little too much. So now it seems that they're at a number that would make more sense. It's definitely getting more attention from teams. And now what we're going to watch is to see if those teams that were initially interested when that number was a little too high, if maybe they'll get back in on this. But for now, right now, we know GM John Robinson down in Tennessee was just on a conference call with reporters just about 30 minutes ago, and he said that he is in touch with Clowney's people, and they're keeping an eye. So as of right now, it looks like Seattle or Tennessee, but we'll see if more teams get involved, Wendy.
Todd McShay's mock draft 4.0 was released yesterday, and he asked four quarterbacks in the top 10. Joe Burrow at 1 to the Bengals, Tua at 5 to the Dolphins, the Chargers taking Jordan Love at 6, and the Jags drafting Justin Herbert at number 9. Jeff Darlington is back with us. And Jeff, let me start with this. What do you hear about the Dolphins' plans to acquire a quarterback via the draft?
Well, Wendy, I can tell you actually more what I'm not hearing from people that I'm speaking with the Dolphins, and that is that they have these ambitions or plans to do whatever it takes to get to number one to take Joe Burrow. We should be very clear. The Dolphins do covet Burrow. They think he's an excellent quarterback, but they're doing so from a respectful distance at this point. I was speaking with one person that said that they don't anticipate the Dolphins doing something outrageous or unprecedented when it comes to trying to trade to get into that number one spot to take Burrow. So If that's being said, do we really anticipate the Bengals feeling like they're going to give up Burrow and that spot for something that is reasonable? I don't get that sense right now. Certainly, the dramatics of this draft, we'll have to continue to talk and wonder about this as we get closer. But for now, it feels much more like the realistic possibilities here would be either staying at number five and potentially taking Tua, or perhaps still drafting into that three spot with the Lions. They certainly have the ammunition with three first-round picks to work with. But I just don't think at this point it looks like the Dolphins would move to one to get Burrow.
All right, Jeff, given that, Lewis, if that's the case, or even if not, what type of price tag are we talking about here?
Yeah, for them to get from five to one, I mean, you would assume that it would start with, you know, maybe two ones. You would swap spots in the first, so you go from five to one. Cincinnati goes from one to five. They'd want another one of your ones, possibly one of the two second-round picks that they have, and who knows what they'd want a future second-rounder as well. It would be a hefty price tag because, look, Cincinnati is actually, you know, they are negotiating from a position of power in that case if someone really wants to come up there and take a player that obviously they could use and someone that could turn around their franchise. So in order for them to give that up, it would cost you a lot. It would cost you a swap in the first, maybe obviously another extra one, probably your two, probably a higher pick of your two second round picks that you have. And who knows what future considerations would be involved. And like as Jeff alluded to right there, that's a hefty price to pay if you're Miami anyway in order to go up that high. I don't think Cincinnati's going to move off of that spot regardless. In Miami, the way I see it, they probably could sit at number five and have their pick of whichever quarterback Cincinnati doesn't take, presumably Joe Burrow. I think they could have Justin Herbert or Tua, and who knows which one it'll be when it comes to that time.
Yeah, Lewis does a great job of laying out like how difficult it would be for Miami to go up to one. If I was the Cincinnati Bengals, there'd be no shot that I would take anything to give up that first pick. The reality, if we're just looking at Joe Burrow and great quarterbacks, listen, they all have like these physical tools that are a little bit different that make them unique, but they really have two non-physical traits or non-physical skills that make them so great. Number one, they're outstanding problem solvers. Joe Burrow is a phenomenal problem solver. Whether it's pre-snap and seeing coverage or changing protections, understanding where the defense is trying to get after him, and post-snap of just when things change. And the second thing, he's got ridiculous instincts and reactions. And so if the Bengals see that as that player, there's no way that I am giving that player up for amount of picks. Two, we've seen in recent years, the Browns, they've had three first-round picks, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they've become championship football teams, and the same with the Vikings. So just because you get those picks doesn't mean you've cured everything. And the reality is this, the Kansas City Chiefs gave up picks to go get Patrick Mahomes. And he is a major reason why they went on and won the Super Bowl and had such a bright future. So to get that type of player in Joe Burrow isn't worth, or to me, it's not worth giving up that first pick. But it's really about Joe Burrow just having ridiculous non-physical traits and really boils down to the instincts and reactions that he has that really save his football team in a really kind of hidden yardage that he acquires for his offense.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
And now revisiting one of the more surprising moves of the offseason. The Broncos signed running back Melvin Gordon, a two-year $16 million deal, despite Philip Lindsay coming off back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. Broncos head coach Vic Fangio explains how that move came to be.
I always thought Melvin Gordon was a good back. One of the things I did was went back and watched all his touches against the Broncos two games in 2018, and it was reaffirmed. I was impressed with that. I've talked to Philip, talked to him yesterday, as a matter of fact, and we really didn't talk about that part of it. You know, Philip is a competitor. You know, he's just not going to give away his job or his carries, and it's pretty commonplace in the NFL right now to have two backs share the running back duties. There's a lot of work there to be had between the both of them, and we'll see how it unfolds.
If the numbers hold true, they could complement each other well. Phillip Lindsay, the more productive runner, but Gordon better in the passing game over the last two seasons. The bottom line was about the same, 5 yards per touch. And now to Gordon's former teammate, Phillip Rivers. He signed a 1-year, $25 million deal with the Colts 2 weeks ago after mutually parting ways with the Chargers. The move reunites Rivers with his former OC and current Colts head coach, Frank Reich, who talked about how they landed the quarterback.
But this was a crazy unique opportunity. Phillip, you know, who I believe is a future Hall of Fame quarterback. And I think whatever he does here in the next year or two, whatever that bit is, will contribute to that career. And, you know, just having been there on the inside for the 3 years I was and knowing the quarterback position like I do, I was so confident that physically he was the right player and that he had not lost anything. All the throws I saw on film, and as I go back and studied them compared to previous throws, I really didn't notice any physical gifts diminishing at all. I really didn't. So then from a locker room guy, I mean, you know how we talk about the juice in this place. This guy brings juice.
Rivers isn't an upgrade over Brissett if he repeats last season's performance. They had virtually the same total QBR. Rivers threw 14 more picks than did Brissett, but did average more yards per pass attempt. Rivers will also play behind a much better offensive line than he had in L.A. Now, normally we would go with the sounds good, sounds bad theme here, but in honor of April Fool's Day, we will ask a different question. Are they a fool or did they find a jewel? Okay. You all have your whiteboards, and we'll reveal your answers at the same time. All right, so listen closely. First up, the Colts signing Phillip Rivers. Are they a fool, or did they find a jewel? Okay, go ahead, guys. You can do it. Put them up. There you go. Lewis
no
Riddick,
question.
What you got?
I've got fool. Look, I'll tell you what, this is what's interesting with me about Phillip Rivers. And look, I understand that head coach Frank Reich really likes the familiarity that he has with Phillip. He really feels as though he knows him. And look, he spoke to the fact that projecting forward, he feels as though Phillip didn't show any drop off in last year and that he will be able to bounce back off of what was obviously a disappointing year. I saw it a little bit differently. I think some of the things that are contributing to Phillip's decline or that contributed to his decline last year were physical. And some of it had to do with the fact that from a decision-making standpoint, he just was not on top of it. Now, when you talk about the physical part of it, his throws that traveled plus 20 yards in the air, he really struggled as far as hitting open receivers. Tight window throws, struggled as far as his completion percentage. Third down throws, red zone throws, leading his team back in tightly contested one-score games. These are all areas that he struggled with. And I know their offensive line in L.A. last year may not be as good as the offensive line he'll have in Indianapolis. But I can tell you this, the weaponry he had out in L.A. is much better than anything Indianapolis can offer him right now. So I'm one of the – color me a skeptic. Call me a skeptic. And until he shows that he can absolutely take his game to the next level, I think they were
a fool.
Fooled on this one.
Okay, we've colored you a skeptic. Jeff, you say no. Jewel. Why is that?
Well, first of all, I should tell the viewers that Lewis Riddick, despite the notion that he gives off when he's talking about anything other than Patrick Mahomes, is a pretty happy person. The guy is the biggest pessimist when it comes to all these other quarterbacks in the NFL. Phillip Rivers, maybe I'm the optimist, maybe I'm the romantic, but Phillip Rivers is the perfect answer for Indianapolis right now. Bring him on. Let's go. Nick Sirianni, these guys talk all the time. They're on the same page. That chemistry, that offensive line that you mentioned, Wendy, this makes at least a better fit than a lot of the other options out there. I'm a jewel here when it comes to this one. I like this.
All right. I know you like the rom-coms, okay. You secret romantic. It's true.
Yes.
Okay. Let's move on now to the Titans. They signed quarterback Ryan Tannehill to a 4-year, $118 million deal. It includes $62 million fully guaranteed, according to Mr. Darlington. So are the Titans fools for giving him that kind of a contract after one good season? Or have they found a jewel? Go ahead and reveal, guys. Okay, we got everybody.
I just had to change color markers because I want to make clear that this is, yep, still a jewel.
Okay, Diana, we're going to let you go, though. What you got?
I know, Jeff, why did we even erase our boards? We could have just kept it. I'm going full here. First of all, look at that number in terms of the money he got. What was Ryan Tannehill's market? Who else was going after Ryan Tannehill? And here's the thing. I covered Ryan a lot during the season this past year. He's a great guy. He's a great leader. We saw what he did in the regular season with the offense, but we also saw what he didn't do come the playoffs. This was a defense that was stacked. They were coached well, and a run game that was explosive. If anyone should really be getting picked. All right, who we got? Dan? Yeah, you have, you represent the Jewels.
Again. Phone died again, Diana.
I'm Jewel, Wendy.
Okay, go ahead, Dan.
Wendy, I'm a Jewel.
Well, I'm that's Jewel suspect, but go ahead.
Yeah, I'm a Jewel. I think that if you look at the situation from a totality of his time in Miami and then in Tennessee, and I've said this a couple weeks ago, Ryan Tannehill, when he's been healthy, has been a good to really good player. I think there's like 138 career touchdowns, 75 interceptions. Like, that's pretty good at the NFL level, especially when a great majority of that time was in a lot of uncertainty in Miami. And you watched what he did last year. He led this team, again, all the way through that playoff run into the AFC Championship game. And we've seen players like Derrick Henry with other quarterbacks and not be as successful as he was last year. And so when you watch Tannehill's confidence rise and rise and rise last year under Arthur Smith and Mike Vrabel and his connection with A.J. Brown, this is a jewel signing for them in this offense moving forward. And I think they've found, at least for the next couple years, their bona fide franchise quarterback.
Okay, Dan, thank you. Tom Brady chose to leave the Patriots after 20 seasons. He heads to Tampa. Was he a fool for leaving New England, or did he create a jewel in the Buccaneers? Lewis, what you got?
You see that little picture there at the bottom?
Wait, I can't
see. That means, you know what? We'll put it like this. See that? it's a fool, but I'm kind of like, I'm not real sure if I really want to call Tom Brady a fool.
It's not a good idea.
I'll just put it this way, though. Look, I think there was tremendous risk in Tom changing. This is purely from a football perspective, changing after 20 years of having so much success, being the most accomplished football player, let alone quarterback, the most accomplished football player probably of all time in a system that is proven to be effective. Now, obviously, it was a little bit talent barren last year, particularly on the perimeter, and he would express that frustration all year long. But I think this is a system that if they just would give him some more weapons, and I think they're going to make a conscious effort to do that through this offseason to make sure that they don't get stuck in a position that they were stuck in last year, that things would have changed for Tom in 2020 in New England. And I say this, you know, when I say fool, going down to Tampa Bay with coaches down there, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, who I respect and love, and a front office who I know many people in that front office who I respect going after Tom and really are excited about what he can bring down there. You know, I hope that he does give them the return on investment that they are looking for. And I hope Tom finds what he's looking for, both on the field and off. I just think for his career, I think it would have been better for him to stay in New England. But what do I know? He's Tom Brady. I'm not. So we'll see.
Yeah, there's that. But listen, you make a fair point. And Jeff, I see what you wrote. That was not a choice. But you know what? Don't you put Jewel and Lewis is wrong. Did you change it? Yeah, Lewis is wrong. Okay. All right. But hold your fire, because I'm going to let Dan Orlovsky in on this first. Get your opinion, and then Jeff will go back to you. Dan?
Yeah, Wendy, I see this as an easy jewel. This was the easiest of the three options for me. I think that Lewis brings up the great points of the reality of what that offense was surrounding Tom Brady last year. Let's just keep it football and the people that they had around him. The people are actually worse as we sit here today than they were during the season. I mean, Philip Dorsett, who has some talent, is not on that team anymore. And so I think that we can sit here and say, like, yes, they're going to upgrade, and we've seen it for such a long time in New England, but there was zero upgrades made to that offense. It was such an easy decision for Tom Brady to leave New England, because he did not want to go through what he went through last year, almost playing quarterback by himself with a little bit of a beat-up offensive line and absolutely no one outside of Edelman to throw the football to. So this was an easy answer. He would have been a fool to stay in New England.
All right, guys. Jeff, I said we were going to hear from you, but we're going to let your sign do the talking. We got to move on, but we understand your position. All right, listen,
Sean Payton said they are holding small draft meetings. This is new on NFL Live at Dixie Brew Company, and plan to work there during the draft with certain precautions. Everyone takes their temperature before entering. 6 to 7 staff members in the room at one time. Everybody spread out, and everybody else will call in. This is teams adjust to our environment and preparing for the NFL draft that is still scheduled to go on as planned April 23rd. As we continue to review the biggest free agent moves, the Saints re-signed Drew Brees, a 2-year deal earlier this offseason, which means Taysom Hill, the team's Swiss Army knife, remains the backup quarterback. Here's Sean Payton on Get Up yesterday talking about Hill's role going forward.
We still view him as a quarterback, and we spent a lot of time this offseason discussing our vision for him this season at quarterback, but then also at the F position. And what I mean by that, Mike, it's that slash tight end receiver. He's a tremendous blocker. He's physical. I don't think people realize how fast he is. He's probably one of the 3 or 4 fastest guys on our team. So he'll play that F position. He'll certainly be involved in the kicking game. It's one of the things that he takes pride in and is very good at. And then the unique situation with our team and with our quarterback, Drew Brees, is he's announced he's coming back for his final season. I think Taysom sees himself as being a starting quarterback in this league, and we do too.
Lewis, Dan, back with us. Lewis, and I'll ask you both, actually, yes or no, when Drew Brees hangs it up, is Taysom Hill the starting quarterback?
Yeah, I believe he is. And you know why? Because Sean Payton told me that at the combine face to face. He said he believes in him. He sees him every day. He knows him better than anyone else. We've barely seen him, but Sean sees him all the time. So, yeah, I believe he is.
Dan Orlovsky?
I agree. I think that Sean Payton's one of the most adaptive and creative coaches we have in the NFL, and he's going to use Taysom Hill in the right way.
All right, Lewis Riddick, big smile. Show everybody how happy you are. Let me see. No, bigger. Bigger. Okay. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye, everybody.